the J Talk Podcast.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to a new season of the J Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, we kickstart our coverage of the 2020 J1 season with part one of our top flight preview, in which we'll look ahead to the prospects for last season's top six, with Stuart Woodward, Alex Bishop and Neil Debnam popping on to chat about Yokohama, FC Tokyo and Kawasaki respectively. But before we get to Stuart first up, I'd like to welcome in Sam Robson, who I'm very pleased to announce has come on board to become my new weekly co-host, arguably the biggest signing of the winter transfer window. This news was broken exclusively to our Patreon supporters late last week, and now we can share it with the wider podcast audience. Sam, it's terrific to have you locked down on a permanent deal. A happy new season, and how are you?
Happy new season. I'm doing very well, thank you, and just want to say thank you very much for bringing me on board. I've listened to this podcast ever since I started on J2 with you, Stuart and John, so it's great to finally join the cast. And thank you also to the Patreon supporters who have kindly funded a nice new microphone for me, so hopefully coming through loud and clear.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant stuff from all involved. Yeah, as I said, it's great to have you wrapped up for the podcast going forward, Sam. So, yeah, whenever your schedule will allow it, yes, you'll be joining us on a weekly basis, and that's absolutely terrific. And, yeah, looking forward to a massive season. And, for a couple of teams, that has already begun. Of course, the J1 season doesn't kick off for another couple of weeks, but, there were mixed fortunes, to put it mildly, in the ACL playoff round on Tuesday, the 28th. Of January, Sam. The weather was pretty ordinary, it's safe to say, in Japan on that Tuesday night, and FC Tokyo hosted the Philippines side Ceres Negros in an absolute swamp at Ajinomoto Stadium. The conditions were a little bit better at Kashima, but they were shocked. I don't know if we'll come on to whether that's the right word or not for it, Sam, but yes, Antlers, it's a shock to all supporters of Japanese football that they will not be in the ACL in 2020.
Yeah, I think it has to go down as a shock. There are mitigating circumstances, but you always expect the Japanese team to go through in the playoffs. Like last season, Kashima quite easily dispatched of Newcastle Jets, so they'll be very disappointed. But, I mean, there are problems at Antlers. They've obviously had very little break after the Emperor's Cup final, but some players only got into training like 12 days before this playoff game, plus with a new manager, quite a few new signings. I think six started in that Champions League game, and you could tell that they hadn't really worked well together and nothing really meshed. And it was a disjointed performance, but I think credit as well to Melbourne, who played very well. They kind of used the big striker up top. He kind of ruffled a few feathers. Andrew Nabuk came back to haunt a previous J-League opponent, and the goalkeeper I thought was terrific. So fair play to them. I wish them all the best in the Champions League. But yeah, it's a blow to Kashima, but maybe it's a blessing in disguise. They can now rest a few players in midweeks, and because they've hardly had a rest really for the last few years with Champions League, with Club World Cups, Emperor's Cup final. So maybe they kind of need that time to really gel together under this new manager.
Yes, indeed. Melbourne victory slay Kashima last Tuesday night, and it was Andrew Nabuk who scored the winner. Yes, formerly of Urawa, of course. He didn't feature all that much in his time at Reds, but all Reds supporters will have been very, very happy indeed to see him come back and knock Antlers out of the ACL, which of course they won in 2018 and were quarter finalists last year. So that means that the J League will have only three clubs in the Champions League this year. FC Tokyo are going through after a 2-0 win over Ceres Negros in the swamp at Ajinomoto, and of course the J1 champions Yokohama and Emperor's Cup winners Kobe are also in the ACL group stage, and that commences next week with Tokyo away to Ulsan of South Korea on Tuesday the 11th. Then on Wednesday the 12th, Kobe host a JDT of Malaysia, and Yokohama also travel to South Korea to face a K-League powerhouse Jeonbuk. We'll be talking more about how we think Yokohama and Tokyo will fare in the ACL with Stuart and Alex later on this episode, and how, of course, the best club in Asia will get on in part two of our preview next week. But before the ACL gets going, F. Marinos and Vissel will raise the curtain on the new J-League season when they square off in the Super Cup at Saitama Stadium on Saturday the 8th. And to talk about that, how Yokohama are shaping up to defend their J1 title, and how they will approach their first ACL campaign since 2014, let's welcome in Stuart Woodward. To join the growing band of J-Talk true believers on Patreon, visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. He's had a couple of months to bask in his side's glory after they stormed their way to a first J1 title in 15 years in early December. But now the grind begins again, and Stuart Woodward, I bet you can't wait to see what F. Marinos do for an encore. Happy new season and welcome back to the pod. How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. I'm all rested now after the off-season and itching to get out of the house after being locked in Saturdays for all this time.
Yeah, actually, having just spent time with the family, I guess that would have taken a little bit of getting used to again.
It certainly does, yes. I'm enjoying the home life a little bit, but I really like to stretch my legs at the weekend and get out, even if it is just to down to Yokohama to watch an away match at the pub.
Indeed, indeed. So I'm sure you'll be popping up to Saitama this coming Saturday, Stuart, when, as I said just before, I welcomed you in, that F. Marinos and Vissel Kobe will square off in the Super Cup. You're looking forward to that?
Yes, if the weather is good, if the sun is shining and it's reasonably warm, unseasonable temperatures. It's a little bit cold if the wind starts to howl around the stadium there. So hoping for a good day, but I've got tickets and all ready to go. I almost can't believe that there is a match this Saturday. It's been such a long time without that thought in my mind.
Yes, indeed. But yes, it's come around again. And, Sam, I guess Stuart is, I'm not quite sure if he's over his hangover after his championship celebrations. I wonder what you think about Yokohama F. Marinos and what sort of a championship hangover they might have. What sort of F. Marinos team do you think we're going to get from the start this season, Sam? Are we going to get the one who was fifth after match day 23 and 9 points behind the leaders, or are we going to get a version of the side that won 10 of their last 11 games, with the other game in there a draw, that saw them storm irrepressibly to the J1 title? What sort of verdict have you come to in pre-season, and how you think F. Marinos are going to go?
I'd like to think they'd be carrying on from where they left off. They've not made too many major changes to that squad. Lost Mateus, who ended his loan, but he was superb, actually, at the end of the season. But otherwise, the team looks fairly settled, and they've kind of brought in a lot of squad players, mainly. I think maybe Onayu could come in ahead of Edgar Jr. if Edgar Jr. is not quite fit enough, but otherwise, it looks like they've gone for continuity rather than any major changes. And I think that's going to work because it's quite a young and fresh squad anyway. So I think just let that continue. And I wouldn't be surprised if Marinos continued in the same vein of form that they left off with at the end of last season.
Well, heaven help the rest of it if that is the case, Sam. But yes, Stuart, so how are you feeling? I imagine you would absolutely still be cock-a-hoop after winning the title, and fair enough as well. What are you expecting from your side? The same sort of hunger that, that they displayed in the last two or three months of last season when they simply would not be denied and, stormed their way to the title? Or do you think there's going to be a settling back in sort of period where performances and results aren't what we came to expect in the last couple of months of last year in the early stages of the new campaign?
Well, this Marinos on form and taking the title is such an unusual feeling for me after watching them, for the last kind of 5 years where, the first match is always a little bit of a struggle or something new is going to happen and the team is stirred up. But as Sam said, yes, like pretty much all of the players carried on, all of the top team, as I said, except Matthias, will be playing again. I think it'll carry on. But as you say, the hunger, the winning streak is kind of reset now. So it's all down to playing the matches and starting again. But Andy Postecoglou did say, like in one of the last interviews that I heard him say, that he didn't do much coaching in the last couple of matches because the players had really just got what he wanted to do, and they were very happy with it, and they were basically coaching themselves. So, whether that will continue a little bit, and they're all in the system and working along. Looking down at the new players, as you say, Addo is a great pickup from Oita. You know, I'd like to see him play more. It would be a shame if he didn't get match time. And another one that caught my eye was YouTube Good. I'm not sure in the consistent play, but Mae Takayuki, he looked very good on the highlights that I've seen of him. And I don't really know anything about Renofa or Yamaguchi, but I think he's been a good player for them for a few years. And we also picked up Tokushima's keeper, Kajikawa. He looks good. I think he might have stayed with Tokushima if they'd have got up to J1. So I think he'll be a solid second keeper there. We've got quite a few options in the for keeper backup at the moment. But the one I wanted to ask you was about Mizunu Makota. He's coming back after being away for 9 years. Played for Marinos from 2007 to 2010, and from the youth team there. A lot of fans were kind of cheering that he was coming back. Do you have any memories of him?
From an FC Tokyo perspective, he was an absolute disaster, to be completely honest with you, Stuart. But everywhere else he's played, he seems to have done very well, and he's got himself quite a following. I think he's rated by pretty much everybody, except, maybe only me, but a fair whack of FC Tokyo supporters who, felt that he just wasn't up to it when he was playing with Tokyo. He didn't fit into the system. He always looked like he was running. His legs were moving really fast, but he wasn't really going anywhere. He just seemed like he was running in quicksand all the time, and he just never hit the ground running, and that season was just an absolute waste. But then he went down to Cerezo Osaka and did extremely well, and including scoring against FC Tokyo when he was on loan with Cerezo. For some stupid reason, Tokyo didn't include a clause in the loan deal that he couldn't play against us, and then he promptly scored against us. So as I say, I'm probably not the right person to ask, because I think everywhere else he's gone, he's done okay. Sam, what sort of a signing do you think Mizunuma might be? I mean, he just appears to me to be a top-up player, perhaps ACL squad depth. I don't really see how he strengthens the first team that did so well, especially in the tail end of last season, of course.
No, I think you're right. I think he will be squad depth, but I think he's a better player than he showed at Tokyo. He was quite good at Tosu before he joined, and then I'm not sure really what went wrong with him at Tokyo, but since moving to Cerezo, he took a little bit of time to get going, but last season he was one of their most consistent players. He's obviously not at the level of Nakagawa from last season, but I think as a backup to come and rotate in for ACL games or cup games, I think he's going to be a very good option for Marinos next season. So I think it's a steady pickup.
Yeah, I mean, he never stopped to try his guts out, don't get me wrong, but for some reason it just didn't click with him there, and I think, at the end of the year he was pretty happy to move on as well, and as I say, he's done all right at Cerezo, and a homecoming of sorts. So, yeah, we'll see what sort of an impact Mizunuma can have. You've both already mentioned Ado Onaiwu. I should have mentioned at the start of the episode that we put out the call for questions from Twitter, and it did get quite a good response. So thanks to everybody who has posted questions. We're going to do our best to get through all of them in this episode. And the first question that we'll get to on this pod is related to Ado Onaiwu, and it comes from at Nickel Hay. The King of Hearts himself asks, will Ado Onaiwu flourish so much in the Marinos system that he's in Europe before the end of the season? Big raps on this player, and it's one of the more head-scratching moves of the off-season that Reds were prepared to let him go, not only on loan again, Sam, but on a full transfer to Yokohama. So they are spoilt for choice up front. There's no question, F. Marinos, but do you see Onaiwu, is this finally the stage where he makes his potential pay and well, maybe pay off into a big money move before the season's out?
I think he'll flourish if given the right amount of game time. I wouldn't go as far to say he'd be in Europe mid-season or during this season. I think he might need a little bit longer than that. This is going to be the first club that he's been under any sort of pressure to score goals. Obviously, at Renault for Yamaguchi, at quite a lower J2 team, he did very well, but they weren't challenging for anything. And even Oita, once they got safe, they weren't really going for an ACL play. So the pressure is on him at Marinos. And plus, he's got so much competition, as you mentioned. Edgar Jr., if he didn't get injured last season, would probably have been the top goal scorer. So if he's coming back, he might be fit for Saturday. So if he's firing, then Onaiwu's got a tough job to oust him from the first team. But if he does get the opportunity with the players around him, I think he's such an intelligent player. His movement is really good. His finishing, I think, could be improved on a little bit. But I suppose Oita last season, he didn't get quite the number of chances that he will do for this Marinos side. So I think, if he plays, I think he'll do very well. But maybe needs one or two seasons at this level to prove himself before I think a European move would materialise.
Fair enough then. All right, so two more quick ones before we let you go, Stuart. One is, it might not be quick because you're probably very excited to talk about it. It's you're back in the Asian Champions League for the first time in several seasons. F. Marinos were drawn in Group H with Gyeongbuk, your first opponents, of course, next midweek. Sydney FC from Australia and Shanghai IPG from the Chinese Super League. How excited are you about this? And have you planned any trips? Do you happen to be popping over to South Korea for next Wednesday's game to begin with?
Yes, I will. I'm going to go with much trepidation. I'm not such a good traveller. I'm very very confident in Japan, but last year I went to Korea for the first time, and I got totally lost on the subway and all kinds of mishaps like that. And so next week I'm heading straight off the airport to the stadium, and we shall see if I get there. Also thinking about going to Sydney too in Golden Week. I have just got to get all of that organized now. But, with the coronavirus scare that we have right now, who knows what the situation will be in a few months' time. The Chinese matches, I think, are rescheduled and possibly to be played in a neutral country. So we're still very much looking at the the ACL, what they're actually thinking of for this year.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, exciting times for F. Marinos and their supporters yet to be back in Asia's premier club competition. And, the last one that I had for you, Stuart, is an interesting departure from behind the scenes at the club with Ange Postecoglou's right-hand man, some would say the brains behind the operation, Peter Klimovsky, and I probably mispronounced that. Sorry, Peter, but as regular listeners know, English is not my first language. He has moved on to manage Shimizu S-Pulse. So there was a question also from Twitter from Kevin at the Prince of PTC. He's asking, how big a loss for F. Marinos will Peter Klimovsky be? And, yeah, for most rank-and-file supporters, that was probably that move probably went largely unnoticed. But, yeah, obviously he has played a huge part behind the scenes with Postecoglou for several years now, and the fact that he is no longer with the F. Marinos, Kevin's asking, so what do you think, Stuart? And then we might get Sam's thoughts as well before we let you go.
From the supporter side, I think people, you know, did actually notice his presence as a person in the match day staff, and he did take over when Andrew Postecoglou went to back to Australia for his father's passing. So. And that was his one match in charge of Marinos, where we won 8-2, was it, against the Sendai away. So he's been like a very good servant to the club over the year. But what I really don't know is like, you can't see very much even on the kind of the extensive videos that they've taken this year of all the backroom and the training and things like that. He seems very much of a background figure, but I definitely think he's qualified to take over a club in his own right. And Andrew is bringing in other staff, I believe, and he's drawing on his Australian colleagues that he's worked with before, and people who obviously want to work with him. So I would see it as a graduation, and it'd be very interesting to see whether he plays exactly the same style as Andrew Postecoglou, or whether he has his own twist on it, and Andrew's been doing it all wrong and he has a better way of doing it. But definitely taking on Shimizu is a real challenge for him, and especially losing Douglas to Kobe. I think that must have been probably on the cards before he even went there, but so definitely in out of the frying pan and into the fire, I think, for him.
Most definitely. And Sam, any thoughts on Peter Klimovsky's move?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a bit strange for Postecoglou to be working without him. Obviously, he had him for the 2 years at Marinos and then the time at Australia as well. He's obviously had a big impact in the way that he sets up his teams and kind of helps him out. But for Marinos, Postecoglou has been successful without him as well at Brisbane Roar. So I think it shouldn't have too much of an effect. He's got a big backroom staff there that will kind of step up in Klimovsky's absence. But yeah, I think it's exciting for Klimovsky to get this test at Shimizu. It's going to be a real test for him to kind of turn them around, especially if he's going to try and play the Postecoglou way, because we saw with Marinos the season before last that they struggled at times, and Shimizu are at a worse base than Marinos were at that point. So yeah, it could be a long season for them, but I think Marinos, I think they'll have enough resources around them to kind of get past this absence. But obviously they kind of tried to hold on to him at the end of the season, so yeah, it will be a blow, but I think they'll be okay.
All right, then. So I'm not sure if either of you have made your hashtag JPred predictions for the new season. Of course, at Gifu Richie has launched the J-League tipping competition for 2020. And if you're interested in finding out about that, search him out at Gifu Richie. And, you can get involved and, win cash prizes. Asterisk, that is not actually the case. But if you enter the hashtag JPred and give your predictions as Richie has spelled out, then he will tally them up at the end of the season, and you can bask in the glory if yours are the best. Guys, I'm going to ask you how you think Yokohama are going to do in 2020 in J1. Obviously, the way they finished last season, it's almost impossible not to think of them as running away with the title. But, whether we think other teams will strengthen behind them or not is, that's obviously why I've got you on to talk about things. But, Sam, I'll come back to you before we let Stuart go. What's your prediction for F. Marinos for 2020? Of course, you might not have tweeted yet, so we're not nailing you down for a prediction, but your rough draft so far, where do F. Marinos sit on that?
This is a really tough season. It always is in the J League, but I think there are probably 7 or 8 teams that could reasonably get in the top 4. I think Marinos have to start as favourites just because of the way they ended last season, and they've definitely added good squad players, so provisionally they're first, but I reserve the right to change that before I put it onto Twitter.
Yep, completely understandable. And Stuart, well, I imagine, yeah, you're still cock a hoop, so you must be fairly confident about doing it all over again.
Well, I've been deluded and hopefully, like in the past, been hopeful that they would end up at the top of the table every year. But this year is probably the most realistic chance for a double. But it all, I think, really depends on, you know, what kind of footing they get off to, and also, you know, whether ACL becomes a distraction. I think Postecoglou might want to win the ACL, so he might be focusing resources on there. So if we're a bit stretched, a little bit thin, that could even it out a little bit.
All right, then. So you're not nailing yourself down for a position prediction at the moment?
Oh, I would say number one. Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, completely understandable. All right, then. Well, it will indeed be fascinating to see what F. Marinos do for an encore in 2020. And Sam and I look forward to checking in with you on a regular basis, Stuart. So thanks again for being with us for our first episode of 2020. It was great to speak with you.
Yep, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right, then. So coming up next, we'll check in with Alex Bishop on last season's runners-up, FC Tokyo. You're listening to the J-Talk podcast, but you already knew that, right? It was a case of so near yet so far, 6 points to be exact, for FC Tokyo in 2019, and to check the pulse of the capital club ahead of a season they hope to go one better, it's a pleasure to welcome Alex Bishop back to J-Talk. Alex, happy new season. How are you?
Well, thanks, Ben. It's been, a good couple of months off. A little bit of a, no real bit of taste in my mouth left over from last season. You know, it was so close, but yet so far. Ready and pumped for the new season ahead.
Great news. Okay, well, that's fantastic. A good bit of optimism in the preseason never goes astray. After all, it was such a strange season last year, wasn't it, Alex? We don't want to relive the pain too much, but it was basically the best chance Tokyo have ever had to win the J1 title. They were miles ahead at the top. Surrendered the lead during their long away stretch of games, but then actually overtaken Kashima again to go top with the 3 games to go, but weren't able to get over the line after 2 home draws, and then of course a comprehensive defeat at eventual champions Yokohama on the final day of the season. So as I say, you don't want to relive this too much. We want to look ahead, but when you look back, I don't know, in the totality of the season, obviously we'd never been that close before, so it's obviously tinged with a number of regrets, I imagine, but do you still feel some sense of, they didn't win anything ultimately, but do you feel some sense of, pride or accomplishment at how far they came last year?
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of. But, I mean, if you'd have said to me before the season began that we'd finish second, you know, I'd have probably, you know, I would have taken it. It would by far exceeded my expectations, for sure. Mm. But it was just kind of a question of how the season was managed, if you get me. My kind of original fear was that when Kubo goes over to whatever is going to be Barcelona, but Real Madrid eventually, we had to have like a proper kind of a succession in mind, a real idea of how we're going to replace his contribution. And we kind of did something, you know, we brought in Mita, but didn't really use him properly. And just in the end, you know, we just gave up too many points towards the end of the season, couldn't really beat certain teams like Shonan. I think that was the third to last game of the season, and just couldn't really continue the run of form throughout the whole season. So it was kind of a question of consistency that we kind of failed with. So by the end of it all, yeah, I mean, it was more kind of a disappointment than any kind of a sense of pride. Unfortunately, you know, finishing second is not anything to kind of turn your nose up, especially for a Tokyo fan, but it just kind of panned out like that.
Indeed, indeed. And, yeah, you talk about the expectations there, Alex. And yeah, I mean, Sam, for me, yeah, I had very, very low expectations at the start of 2019, basically after the way that 2018 petered out. Obviously, Tokyo were up there with Hiroshima for a large stretch of the season before both were obviously swamped by Kawasaki, and Tokyo really fell away at the end of the season. They might have won one of their last 10. I'm trying to remember that off the top of my head, but it's probably not exactly correct. But, yeah, the end of the season was absolutely brutal, and I had, as I say, yeah, no expectations at all of a title challenge last season. So, yeah, I mean, in a completely opposite way, as we've just talked to Stuart about, I mean, the way Yokohama finished last season, it's impossible not to imagine them just rolling on again at the start of this new campaign. But obviously, other teams do their homework on how Yokohama are going to set up, and they might find things a bit tougher. So, yeah, the way that Tokyo recovered last season after the disastrous end to 2018, I guess, yeah, it has to be commended, although ultimately we ended frustrated with, our heads in our hands on the final day at the Nissan Stadium. So, Sam, that brings us on to 2020 and how we think, Kenta Hasegawa might change things, how some of the new signings might settle in, and hopefully improve the way Tokyo play, not only their results and their position in the table, but I'm sure Alex will agree in a minute or two, we'd really like to see some more expressive football. And do you think, Sam, that some of the players that Tokyo have brought in will help Kenta Hasegawa set his side up to play that way?
Well, there's definitely a bit of flair in the players, Leandro and Adelton especially. I don't know if they're the most consistent, but if you can harness the talent, especially with Leandro, I think he's could be the answer to the right-hand side issue where Omori has played and Mita was playing last season after Kubo went. So that could be a positive. Adelton on his day is incredible, on another day he's dreadful, so you've just got to get him at the right moment. But there are a few optimistic signs in pre-season. Like last season, it was pretty much 4-4-2 or bust with Diego Oliveira and that guy up top, but he's been trying this 4-3-3. He's bringing in a few young players like Shuto Abe, who we saw very briefly last season. He's come in and done a lot in pre-season. He's played most of the games. Quite rave reviews about him. So I think bringing in those young players, Taichihara, I know he got sent off in the ACL, but he was playing right-hand side of that front three. So I think there are a few good youngsters to come through, and hopefully they'll bring a bit more of an enthusiasm and a bit more of an expressive manner to Tokyo's play. It does look like he's trying to steer clear of being quite so rigid in the way he was approaching things, and that can only be a positive.
All right then. Well, that's really interesting stuff. And so, yeah, Alex, I'd seen stuff in preseason about the formation change as well, and was intrigued. Obviously, the ACL game is very hard to take any lessons from, as we've said a couple of times earlier. It was played in an absolute monsoon, and the pitch resembled a swamp. I mean, you deserve a massive credit for rocking up to the stadium yourself and sitting through that. But yeah, it's good to see that Tokyo made it through that tie. What have you made of the arrival of Adelton and Leandro? They're obviously the two banner names, and obviously it's such a bloated squad. It's really hard for a young player to make through to break through and make his name. But Abe might be one that has an opportunity to do that this season. Or perhaps you might have seen a diamond in the rough yourself that you think can make an impact on the first team squad.
Yeah, good point. I mean, it is quite a big squad this year, you know, in preparation for the ACL. Taichihara, I'd like to see a little bit more of him in these games, even though he's been sent off. I'm not sure if that carries a ban or not, you know, in the ACL. But definitely, as Sam said before, Shuto Abe is someone I've watched a few times at the under-23s when he's made the odd appearance, and I think he made one first-team appearance last season, I'll have to check. Definitely, I'd like to see a little bit more of him this year, see him kind of brought in a little bit. Definitely a good prospect for the future. With the two new Brazilian lads we've brought in, Leandro, I remember he was with Kashima when they won the ACL, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember going to see him a few times then, and he was pretty good. He does have a little bit of flair that we lack sometimes. And him in this new kind of 4-3-3, yeah, we could, maybe we're looking at like a little bit more of a an appealing approach rather than the counter-attacking system that we had last season. So hopefully we can kind of, you know, endear to a few neutrals like Sam, perhaps, heaven forbid, you know, with FC Tokyo. but no, definitely as a whole, you know, FC Tokyo, we don't go and do any kind of deep scouting of players in Brazil or wherever, maybe, you know, over in kind of Eastern Europe or wherever other players may come from. Generally, we do sign players within the, you know, the J League, for better or for worse. I'm not sure why it is, if we have the means to do it, if we have the scouting networks, or why, or we just don't bother to do it. I really don't know. But for players that we could have got within the J League and this new 4-3-3 that Hasegawa seems to want to go with, I think it's definitely, you know, a steady window that we've had.
Yeah, fair enough then. Another thing that's a positive, well, hopefully it'll end up being a positive for the club, Alex, is being back in the Asian Champions League, of course. Yeah, that win over Aceres Negros has earned Tokyo a place in ACL Group F. The first group stage game is away in South Korea next Tuesday, if all goes to plan. And Perth Glory and Shanghai Shenhua are also in the group. And in years past, qualifying for the ACL and putting our best foot forward there has been a priority for the club and its fans. Haven't made it past the round of 16 in the two attempts we've had so far, but it's obviously a competition that the club looks to try and qualify for and looks to do their best in. So the arrivals of Leandro and Adalton hopefully will add to the depth up front with the Nagai, and obviously Oliveira, who won't be fit to start the season, but once he's up and running again, hopefully that will be a decent group of strikers that can perform on both fronts.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it's all going to fit together, who he's going to go with. I mean, you think with a 4-3-3, typically that front three, they have to be kind of quite fit, you know, chasing down defenders, causing those errors. So you can imagine like the likes of Nagai being up there, perhaps on the right, a wider position this time, maybe with Diego in the center, or maybe even a Dialton in the center. That looks like how it's going to go. And maybe even Leandro on the left, who knows? So there's quite a few options that we have, which is not, we couldn't really say that towards the end of last season, right? So definitely we have that depth up front, and it's pretty potent if you think about it. I'm not sure how the league campaign's going to go, you know, with the with a new shape, a new system that we're introducing. It might take some time to click, but for sure it's going to be an interesting one to see.
Yeah, most definitely. So last season at Tokyo were affected, of course, by a lengthy run of away games in the second half of the season due to the Rugby World Cup. And again in 2020, they've had to bend over backwards and will be forced to play 8 straight league games on the road from the middle of June to the end of August, with the 6-week Olympic break in the middle of that run. But, that obviously means that home games are front-loaded and also back-loaded. And as it comes earlier in the season this year than last, it does mean that 7 of their last 10 are at home in 2020. So, of course, in 2019, they returned home with those 2 straight home games against Shonan and Reds and were unable to win either before, they surrendered a top spot to Yokohama and then, were swept aside on the final day. So that will be another wrinkle that we'll no doubt have to talk about all throughout the season, and that will bore our listeners silly, as we did all of last season, and I'm sure they're sick of it. And, don't take this personally, Alex, but there weren't actually any questions from Twitter about FC Tokyo. I'm sure that all the coverage we had to assign to them last year when they were top for so long, of course, meant that, there might be a little bit of FC Tokyo fatigue amongst our core listenership, but we'll dazzle this season and, we'll have a proper reason to talk about them in glowing terms in 2020. So before I let you go, Alex, we did the same with Stuart in part one. Have you, how's your JPred coming along? Have you whittled it down? And, more particularly, where do you have Tokyo finishing at the moment? Of course, we're not pinning you down for a final prediction, but in your draft, you're probably on your third or fourth draft by now. Where do you have Tokyo pegged?
Not in the top 4 at this point in time. You know, I think it's top four would probably kind of exceed my expectations a little bit. I'm thinking more fifth or sixth, although I might put them in there just as a fan. You know, it'd kind of be silly of me not to. But, I mean, I think you mentioned before that I think Marinos, you know, they're the only ones who are standing out. The transfer window has been a little bit unspectacular, should we say? And Marinos just haven't lost anyone. They've got a few kind of okay signings to strengthen the squad. Mizunuma from Cerezo, for example. But yeah, I'm probably going to put them at number one. Maybe as a bit of a surprise, Reysol, they managed to keep hold of Olunga, right? So I'm thinking they could be a bit of a surprise this season. So I might put them in there as well. Other than that, it's kind of, you know, I'm still kind of looking into it. Maybe Kobe, it could be their year. I'm thinking about them as well. So, well, we'll have to see. It's not an easy one this year.
No, most definitely, yes, and we've only got, what is it, the 21st, isn't it, when the first game takes place on the Friday night, Shonan hosting Urawa. So, yeah, not too much time to narrow down your J-Preds, but, yeah, all right, maybe by the time that the 21st rolls around, Alex, you might be feeling slightly more positive about Tokyo and where they'll finish in the league. But, Sam, where do you have FC Tokyo then as we sit here, yeah, a couple of weeks out from the start of the season?
Yeah, I'm along the same lines as Alex, actually. I'm pretty glad that you two aren't thinking Tokyo are going to win and then you might kick me off the podcast for this prediction. I've got them about sixth or seventh. I think, yeah, I think other teams have strengthened just a bit more, and yeah, I just don't see enough creativity necessarily with Tokyo. I think they're a solid team and Hasegawa will always have them competitive, but yeah, I think outside the top four for me.
Who are your top four, Sam?
Oh, goodness me. I tried to get away from this in the Marinos section.
Any order?
I've got so many. I've got Marinos top as well. Right. I also think Reysol could be a surprise package. And now with Genshoji going to Gamba, I think they could be up there. Kawasaki can't rule out. I'm just naming many teams. As it stands, I go Yokohama, Kawasaki, Kashua, Gamba, but I'm not sticking to that.
Right, yeah. I agree, but I think Kawasaki, I'm not too sure.
Oh, they're putting up goals in pre-season.
Oh, true.
All right, well, yeah, we're coming on to Kawasaki fairly shortly with Neil, so it'll be really interesting to hear what he's got to say about their pre-season and, yeah, how he thinks they'll get on in 2020. But for now, Alex, well, yeah, we all we can do is sit back and, yeah, hope the ACL gets off to a decent start if the first couple of rounds are played in the coming weeks. And, yeah, look forward to, hopefully, yeah, a more entertaining brand of FC Tokyo football in 2020. And look forward to catching up with you during the season to see how the Gasmen get on. So for now, yeah, great to have you back on the podcast and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Cheers. Great to be back, Ben.
All right, then. After a quick break, Sam and I will be back to talk about Kashima Antlers. The J-Talk Podcast, now with more Sam Robson. And welcome back. It was indeed a strange season for perennial powerhouses Kashima Antlers in 2019. They were, of course, the defending ACL champions at the start of the year. They took a long time to grow into the league campaign, but as they continued to battle on four fronts, they looked primed to make a run at yet another J1 title when they rose to second after match day 22. A 9-game unbeaten run saw them rise to the summit, and we had all basically crowned them champions yet again. Yeah, then a very un-Antlers-like stumble saw them fail to win any of their last three games. FC Tokyo had overtaken them, and yeah, it just wasn't to be for Antlers in 2019. They exited the ACL in the quarterfinals as well, and of course on New Year's Day they were unable to win yet another Emperor's Cup, with the Kobe putting them to the sword at Saitama Stadium. So, yeah, a really interesting season in prospect now, Sam. How do they bounce back? We'll bounce back from finishing third. Most clubs obviously would consider that to be a successful season. But Antlers are, they're used to winning and they're used to winning things. And, they've gone through an interesting off-season as well, to say the least.
Yeah, you're right to say bounce back, because the way they finished last season, obviously going from being in four competitions to really stuttering towards the end, and especially that Emperor's Cup final, they didn't look like a Kashima team. So they've had to have a refresh. They've obviously got this Zago in as manager, fresh ideas, a lot of new players as well. Just going through them, Tatsuki Nara from Kawasaki, fullbacks in Hirose, Nagato and Sugioka. Then a couple of Brazilians in Everaldo and Juan Alano, and then Ryuji Izumi as well. So a lot of fresh faces in there. They're going to try and alter their style a little bit. It didn't work in the ACL, but, I mean, the manager has only had a couple of weeks with these players, so they might take a little while to get going this season. You know, there weren't great signs in that ACL game, really. The players didn't look... really, there wasn't much of a link up between them, but it will come in time. But yeah, I think it's going to be a season, like a transitional season for Kashima, this one.
Yeah, so we mentioned it right back at the start of the episode. Yeah, the ACL playoff loss to Melbourne Victory, who, you know, obviously you deserve massive credit on the night for heading up to Japan and doing the job, and excuses Antlers might have about you not being cherry ripe for that game, and obviously fatigue they will have had after basically playing for 12 months a year for the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, that doesn't mean anything to the Melbourne Victory people, who rightly basked in the glory of their victory and have an ACL group stage spot to show for it. But obviously that does open up their season for a real crack at the league title. And as we're going to come on to next with Neil Debenham on Kawasaki, and obviously you mentioned Tatsuki Nara there, I'm sure he'll have things to say about that. I'm not sure what sort of a mental state Neil's in at the moment about Tatsuki Nara moving to Kashima, so that's something to look out for in the next part of the podcast, listeners. But yeah, we did have a couple of questions along those lines with the Antlers not being involved in the ACL and what that could mean for them in the league. And the one I'll take first comes from Johnny Nickel at Johnny Nickel 6, who is our newest Patreon supporter. So, Johnny, absolutely terrific of you to come on board today, Monday, Japan time. Absolutely fantastic, and I really appreciate your support, and very much appreciate your question as well regarding Antlers. And Johnny asks, Sam, Rei Kashima, was the defeat to Melbourne Victory as much of a shock as everyone is claiming, and could their early ACL elimination be a blessing in disguise? So, yeah, we've said it. We think it might be a season of transition, but specifically in the league, being able to put most of their eggs in that particular basket. Obviously, they'll put the kids out in the Levain Cup, I imagine. What does that actually mean? A season of transition, but they might find themselves right in the hunt for the top flight title, I would wager.
Yeah, I think, Stuart Smith said it on Twitter, actually, just after the loss, that it could be a blessing in disguise for them, so they can focus purely on the league and use the Levain Cup, as every other team can do, to kind of test new things, test new players. So they haven't really had that for a few seasons now, so I think that will only be beneficial, and it will give the first team a chance to rest, which, obviously, as you mentioned, they haven't for a few years now, so it's definitely going to help them. As for it being a shock, it's always a shock when Kashima Antlers go out of a Champions League, especially at that early. They would have expected to, but given the circumstances, you could see it coming, to be honest. There are a couple of weeks training, if that, so I think it will help them, actually. I don't think they'd have been considered as title contenders if they had to play the ACL as well. I don't think this squad, getting used to the new manager, would necessarily be able to cope with having to play two games a week or three games a week. So I think, it gives them their best chance, I think, of really challenging Marinos and whoever it might be at the top of the league.
All right, so terrific stuff there, Johnny. Great question. Thank you very much for that, my friend. And the other question along the same lines came from the excellent at Plastic Pitch on Twitter, and it's basically a very similar question, but slightly rephrased, Sam. But actually, Plastic Pitch does go one step further at the end of his tweet. He asks, does the fact that Antlers have exited the ACL before the season has even started make them favourites for the J1 title? I don't think either of us are putting them above Yokohama at this stage, but I guess it can't be understated, can it? I mean, we think that Yokohama have done, you know, decent strengthening in the off-season with the likes of Mizunuma and Unaiwu coming in, especially up front. That will, you know, they need a depth for a proper run at the ACL, and those two players in particular will help. They've done some other strengthening, of course, but yeah, the fact that Antlers, you know, they just don't have to worry about the ACL, and they'll probably blood two or three absolutely outstanding kids in the Levain Cup as well. That's the thing with this club. They just, they keep bringing through absolute guns, into their first team, who are straight out of the youth system. So, I wouldn't put it past them to unearth at least two, first teamers by the middle of the season from the kids they put out in the Levain Cup. So, I don't think we're going that far, are we? But you probably have to put them in the reckoning.
Yeah, well, going along the lines of those youngsters, I think Ryotaro Araki is a young player that I think should be watched for. He's been really impressive in pre-season. It didn't get a game in the ACL, which was pretty disappointing for me, but I think give him a few Levain Cup games and he might be on the brink of a first-team place. But I think it's right to say that they've definitely got an advantage by not being in the Champions League. The trips, especially going down to Australia or going to China or Korea or whatnot, definitely can take it out of a team if they're playing Wednesday and then coming back on the third on the for the Sunday game. So that's definitely an advantage. The only issue I have with Kashima is just how changed this team is. He's got to blood a lot of new signings, and I think that will take time as well, which will be at a similar point to when everyone is playing in these Champions League games. So it might balance it out a little bit. So I wouldn't go as far to say they'd be favourites, but I think it is favourable to them. It gives them a little bit of breathing space to sort of get themselves together and get into the season.
All right, terrific stuff. So, yeah, thanks again to Johnny and to Plastic Pitch for their questions. And before we wrap up on Antlers then, a check on some of the major ins and outs then, Sam. Obviously, Serginho was, for most neutrals, a really disappointing out because, he'd had some glorious moments with Antlers. And, yeah, to move to a Chinese second division club is... it's absolutely his right to do that, and I'm sure the move will set him up financially for a long time to come. But in terms of a good player leaving the J-League, it's a real disappointment. But so where do you think they've strengthened themselves, and with some of the players that have come in, and they will they'll be really disappointed to have missed out on Gen Shoji coming back to Japan, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty surprised that they weren't in for it. They lost Jung and the Korean centre-back in the winter as well, so they could have definitely done with such a presence at the back. I think it's a tremendous coup for a Gamba. And Serginho, obviously, is a massive loss as well. The league has lost a couple of players to the Chinese segment. I think it was Rafael Silva a couple of years ago did the same move. So, yeah, that's quite disappointing, but they have looked to replace them. The one to watch is Everaldo, the new striker. I know during the ACL coverage, a lot was shown of him doing a bicycle kick from outside the area last season in Brazil. I think he was fourth top scorer in a team that got relegated. So I think there's definitely a potential there for a lot of goals for him. He wasn't quite up to the pace, I don't think, in midweek, but yeah, he could be a very good signing, and hopefully for Kashima, kind of replace the goals that Serginho brought, and just his all-round impact, especially in the Champions League, that season they won it. He came in just for the end, the kind of knockout rounds of the Champions League, and he was incredible, and kind of was the main reason that they won that Champions League that season. So, yeah, that's a big loss, but yeah, there's quality that has been brought in. It just depends on how long it takes them to settle in.
All right, then. And, yeah, before we get a prediction from you on Antlers, we mentioned the new manager in passing, Antonio Carlos Zago. Obviously, yeah, got off to a disappointing start with the loss in the ACL playoff against Melbourne Victory. But, yeah, what do you know about him? Have you picked the brains of any of your colleagues who might have been watching sides he's managed in the past? And how do you think his side will differ from the way Gore Oiwa had them operating last year?
Well, I think in terms of the way they're set up and the formation exactly, it'll be fairly similar. Maybe it'll switch a bit between 4-4-2 and 4-3-3. But, I mean, the main thing I've got from the Brazilian guys is just he's an attacking manager. And if you're going to have this team play and then maybe Marinos playing attacking-wise and Frontale, I think you've got a lot of good teams going for it. And there should be really exciting games with them. A little bit more kind of... a bit less rigid maybe than Goiwa, who still was quite attacking, but yeah, this guy looks like he's aiming to play a more pressing game and a more attacking game. Again, as I've said, it will take him time to kind of change that bit of the style for Kashima, but once that gets going, it could be very exciting to watch.
Alright then, so yeah, where do you have Kashima currently in your J-Pred, Sam?
Well, you can never rule them out. I'll never rule them out. At the moment, I have them fifth, just outside the top four. But, yeah, get on a good run, there's no doubt they could easily get in the top two, top three. But, yeah, I think maybe this is a season too early for this manager and this team.
Fair enough, then. Yeah, it's basically impossible for me to, not have them in the top six. Whether... not being in the ACL will make that much of an impact on them and allow them a free run at the title, basically, is it's pushing it a little bit for me at the moment, but yeah, I can I could see them anywhere from first to sixth basically at the moment, and so obviously, as we've said numerous times so far, and no doubt will until the end of this episode, we still have until the 21st to iron out our J-Preds. So, yes, they're not set in stone yet, but it does promise to be an interesting season for Antlers, and I seem to have said that for every team so far, but that's because the J-League is so interesting, isn't it, Sam? All right, well, next we'll check in with Neil Debnam on last season's fourth place finishers, Kawasaki. J-Talk, the podcast by the fans, for the fans. Oh, no, hang on, that was Gas Talk. And next to last season's fourth-placed finishers, Kawasaki, of course. So they came into the 2019 season as the two-time defending J1 champion. But a very frustrating season it was for the Frontale faithful. And, Neil Debnam, obviously, amongst them. Neil, it's great to have you back on the podcast. Hopefully sweeping 2019 under the rug and a fresh start in 2020. A happy new season, and how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, and I hope everyone else is well as well. And yeah, happy new season, and you know, don't sweep it completely under the rug last year, because we won that the most desirable of all cups apart from the Fuji Xerox Super Cup, so you know, it wasn't a complete disaster. We got the cup everyone was after.
Most definitely, yes. Your first Cracker Cup success for Frontale. I shouldn't have ignored that in my intro. What fates await Kawasaki in 2020 then, Neil? As I said before we started recording, I was looking through the list of transfer ins and outs, and obviously a particular out that will have tugged at your heartstrings. I didn't see a massive amount in either direction. Obviously, Hiroyuki Abe going to Nagoya is a decent name also heading out, along with Tatsuki Nara. But I wonder really what's going to be different about Frontale this season. But as you've both filled me in the green room, they're banging goals in for fun in the preseason. So what's behind that? And how are you feeling about the squad for the new campaign?
Well, apparently Oniki, after perhaps getting some criticism from some people, I don't know who was doing that, but some people were moaning about to him, I guess, and he said this year we're going super aggressive, and the sort of the word on the Twitter street is that we're going to rip off Yokohama F. Marinos tactics, which is, you know, I mean, it's good, it's exciting, and I want to see it. It's just a shame that they did it first and then we're copying them, you know, what with them being the neighbours. But yeah, I really hope we can get back to playing something that's a bit more interesting, because maybe, I don't know, I mean, a few years ago, I think we had not the moral high ground, but we could always say, you know, oh, we didn't win the league, but we were playing some nice attacking football and it was very easy on the eye. But I think probably in the first title, no, the second title season, we really, I mean, it wasn't exciting win a victory at all, really. It was pretty turgid stuff. And then last year we took it to another level, another depth. So hopefully with, you know, stealing a few ideas from our neighbours, we might be doing something a bit more interesting next year. But sort of regarding players in and out, like you said, there's someone left to go to Kashima. I can't blame him. I've unfollowed him on Instagram, but he didn't post much anyway. And, I can't blame him. Good luck to him, apart from when he's playing us, Nara, I'm talking about, of course. I guess it's obvious you said it. And Abe went as well. Chinen's gone on loan to Oita, which is a bit weird because now we're going to play with a few more strikers, apparently, and then we loan one out. I'm trying to think who's coming. We've had the guy from Shonan. What's his name? Yamane. And with our right-back problems last year, I'm not sure if he's going to play there. I guess he will. But we also got another right-back. So it's almost a repeat of last year's off-season in that we get rid of all our right-backs and sign a couple of new ones. So whether the two this year will be more favoured by Oniki, I don't know. Hopefully he'll find one who can play well and put him in instead of playing Morita there. But the Brazilian looks kind of interesting player. I saw him. What do they call it here? Lifting. I saw him. Do they call it lifting here, or is that what the kids call it in the UK now? I can't remember. But he was doing lots of that lifting and ball tricks. So he can play football. Well, he can play that kind of, you know, demonstration football. Who else is there? There's someone else, isn't there? This is shocking. let me just check my blog post. There was, I think people are saying this is the season of youth. This year, it will be our youth players coming through. And I'm kind of excited about that. It's also a cheeky way to get through a off season without spending much money, I guess. But I think it's going to be Damian's year this year because he scored a lot of goals in pre-season, as we were just talking about. I think he got 8 in one game and he's got 15 so far in 4 pre-season games. And although the toughest team we've played is Verdi, we did beat them 9-1 today. So, maybe after the criticism last year and Nicky got for not playing to his strengths, maybe he decided that might be a good idea, and maybe we're really playing to his strengths now. So it's, yeah, something, maybe some brightness there for me. So I'm a little bit not optimistic. I'm anticipatory. Does that make sense?
No, fair enough. Yeah. So it will be really interesting if Leandro is unleashed. It was frustrating first season for the big man at Frontale last year. But, yeah, as you say, Neil, he's been banging them in for fun in the preseason. And, Toru Oniki will be hoping he can carry that form into the start of the league campaign. And, so Sam Wall, we had Alex on. He tried to extract your full top four from you. And, you did have Kawasaki second in your current draft. So I wonder whether, your head has been turned by, Leandro's goal-scoring exploits in pre-season and, Frontale's as a whole. And also for the fact that, they don't have ACL commitments for the first time since 2016. I wonder whether that has also factored in to your, somewhat rosy forecast for Frontale this year.
Yeah, I definitely think that will help you. You don't have as much pressure on the players playing midweek and whatnot, especially players like Ryota Oshima, who are so crucial to this team, but so injury prone. If you can give him a rest each week, then I think that's got to help, because, yeah, with him out for 3 months of last season, that definitely cost them. But I just think all the ingredients are there, except for maybe right back. We're on replacing El Senio season two, so hopefully Diogo Mateos can be that man that can step in, because all the chopping and changing last season, you had about four different players play right back. Yamamura was in at centre back. It was just, they need some consistency there. But otherwise, there's so much talent in that team. With as Neil was mentioning, the young players, Tanaka broke through mainly last season. He could be a really good player this season with Oshima and Morita in that midfield. Then you've got the players like Ryo Hatate and Kaoru Mitoma, who've obviously impressed for the Japanese youth team, so they'll get their chance probably in the League Cup first, but it's at least a way to develop those players, because they haven't had that for the last few seasons. So to give game time to those sorts of players, it'll definitely improve them. And I think there's just quality all around this squad, and if finally they can use Leandro Damian properly, then I think they're going to be very tough for any defence to stop, but it's just whether they do, because last season he was obviously on the bench far too often, always seemed to score. But yeah, if you get him playing most of the games next season, he's going to score a lot of goals. So with that in mind, I've got to think Kawasaki are going to be up there.
All right then. So yeah, Neil, you mentioned that it might be a season of youth emerging for Frontale, and obviously Andro is not a young buck by any means, but yeah, he'll obviously play a huge role. But yeah, some of the more experienced names at the club, you never want to write them off, but they're obviously terrific professionals. But I mean, the likes of Yu Kobayashi, who was down to 13 goals last season, he's seen his goal haul decrease for two straight seasons after he hit 20 plus 3 years ago. Obviously, Akihiro Iyanaga was the major disappointment of last season. Followed up his Player of the Year campaign in 2018 with a very frustrating season, and of course Kengo Nakamura out with a long-term injury. So yeah, if it is to be the season of youth, Sam's mentioned a couple of names already. Is there one player in particular you've got your eye on? And along those lines, how important do you think not having the ACL and having the Levain Cup instead to breed some of these players and bring them through might prove to be a benefit in the long run for Kawasaki?
It'll be crucial, I guess, as long as we... I mean, last year I complained about him rotating too much, and now I'm going to say as long as we rotate, we'll be fine. But it's definitely a good opportunity, because either we've changed their system, but now... I still feel like there's not a lot of room in there, because, like you said, there's if we have that midfield of Morita, Tanaka, Oshima, and then we're playing Damião and a different pronunciation that time. I'm going to try it for all the different pronunciations tonight. So he's out front. Kobayashi's back on the right, apparently. But that leaves one spot for Hasegawa, Saito Manabu, Iyanaga, and all the youngsters. And it's like, that's a lot of pieces, a lot of people to go into one place. So that could be interesting. But I think you're right that Levan group games are going to be the key. That's where we're going to sort of squeeze a few in here and there. And maybe they'll make a claim for it, because I guess at the start of last season, no one could have predicted Ao Tanaka being the player of the season. And I did a little survey on my blog of among other Frontale fans, and he was like runaway the winner of people's player of the season, apart from the people who really like one player who just voted for that player, which was Oshima fan votes for Oshima, the Wakizaka fan votes for Wakizaka, but everyone who didn't have any flesh in the game? Is that the phrase? I don't know. Any skin in the game? There you go. That's it. If they didn't have that, they were just choosing Ao. So, yeah, I think Levan's going to be exciting this year. And I mean, I don't want to sort of denigrate the ACL, but I'm a lot more excited about going to, hang on, where are we going? We're going somewhere funny on a Wednesday night. I can't remember where it was, but maybe it's Shimizu or somewhere, but there's some like nice, midweek trips that are totally unnecessary that I'm really looking forward to, because we'll get to see some different players and hopefully we'll get to see some young talent. I can't remember. I've answered the last part of the question so long that I forgot what the first bit was.
Well, yeah, a young player in particular that you are excited to see hopefully break through in 2020.
Yeah, well, this is kind of a tricky question because Mitoma was with us last year, Hatate was with us last year, and Isaka Zane was with us last year, but all of them got maybe sort of 5 or 10 minutes off the bench at the most, and we really couldn't see much from them. I think Mitoma is a fan favourite already because he's been with us for, since he was like 9 years old or something like that, and there's a photo on the internet of him and Ao Tanaka both sort of wetting their pants because Kengo's just shook their hand. So I think he's going to be a fan favourite. Bizarrely, because now my once beloved Nara's gone, I'm kind of interested. I'm not saying necessarily he's going to be the breakthrough star of the season, but I've got a funny feeling we've got a defender called... what's his name? Kamiya, who's come from university. And I'm kind of interested in this guy because we never get defenders from universities. We've just spent, you know, always our young players always seem to be midfielders or attackers. And it's like, oh, we've got a defender. That's interesting. It's like there's some kind of forethought going in here. But I don't know, maybe it sounds ridiculous, but you know, you kind of look at the players' faces in the sort of fan event at the start of the year. And I thought, I don't know, I think maybe he's going to do something this year for no other reason than I just have a feeling. But so I'll say him, but I think maybe Zane Isaka as well, because he's the one who people know least about, maybe, because the other two have had some international recognition. So maybe Zane Isaka might surprise a few people, but yeah, I'm going to say Kamiya. Why not? Oh no, I'll tell you I should choose one of the 5 goalkeepers we've now got. So I wondered if that was a different formation we're going to try, like see if we could play more than one keeper. But yeah, none of them are young, so yeah, I won't choose them. I'm going to say Kamiya just to be left field.
All right, we will file that name away. Okay, so before we get a J-Pred prediction from Neil, obviously Sam's already tipped his hand in part two about how he thinks, how he currently thinks Kawasaki will go. Sam, there was another question from Twitter from @J1Toke, the excellent J-League stats Twitter handle that he does a power of work and comes out with some excellent factoids on the game. His question about Frontale is, have they done enough in the transfer market to address key areas, and do you see them in the mix for the title this year? So you currently have them second, so I think we've already answered the second part of the question, and I guess that also partly answers the first half as well, although as you've both said, the young players look to be making a real impact here, so perhaps they didn't really need to make any real splashes in the transfer market, and the players that they needed were kind of there the whole time.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. I just think Aniki has to get the most out of the current players that he's got, because he's got so many talented players. I think if they just get the system right, get the tactics right, I think they're a very good team. The only issue transfer-wise is whether they can sort out this right-back issue, because as long as with just having a poor right-back last season, they had to then change it all over, and it kind of messed up the defence completely. So as long as Diogo Mateus or Yamane settles into that right-back role and they can just have a settled defence for the season, I think, yeah, all the ingredients are there for Kawasaki, but I don't think they had to do too much more, really, in the transfer window.
All right then, Neil. So, yeah, I think we've spoken enough about the personnel so far. So, I guess, yeah, you can have a crack at answering the second half of @J1Toke's question as well then. So, do you see your team in the mix for the title this year, bouncing back, obviously, after a frustrating 2019?
You know me and my jinxes.
You'd have to think you'd be there and thereabouts, though.
Yeah, I can't say I'm super confident, but I think it'll be interesting. I guess it depends how we start, because we always start terribly. If we can start with a few good results and, you know, get a bit of excitement going, maybe we can really put some pressure on. I guess, I mean, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this knows already, but who are you both tipping for first? Marino's, is it? Is that the wisdom, or have we not got there yet?
Well, yeah, basically, yeah. That's kind of, I think, Sam is leaning and I am as well at the moment, yeah.
So I kind of feel like they were great last year. I mean, hats off to them. But I do feel that, you know, they did have some significant wobbles, didn't they? So I don't think they're invincible. And they've got ACL this year, which isn't going to help them. Unless they deal with the ACL like we did last year. I can't say, to be honest. I mean, if we finish 10th and it's fun, like it wasn't last year, I wouldn't say I'm going to be pleased about that, but it at least wouldn't leave me quite so frustrated at the end of the year. Obviously, I hope we finish higher than 10th, and I think we've got a shot at the ACL. I don't know. Yeah, it all depends on the start, I'd say. And I don't want to talk us up too much, because I'm sure people get fed up with me talking, you know, sort of just moaning about how awful we were, and then we still finished 4th. So yeah, I've become aware recently that I probably quite annoying at times. So, I'm trying to be less annoying. What's the least annoying thing to say, do you think? Maybe, like, I don't know.
Oh, I think if you think you're going to win it, I think you should say you're going to win it, if you really think that.
I can't say I think we're going to win it, because it's just, it's like, you know, we're at a crossroads, and it depends which route we take, or something like that. But I think it really does matter. It does depend on how we start and how Mr. Onyeki, what he decides to do this year. I think maybe he read my Frontale Rabbit survey as well, because he got overwhelmingly one villain of the year, and I didn't even vote for him. So, I think, you know, the feeling around the club is that he needs to do something this year, otherwise he should sling it, basically. So, so I think maybe not the pressure's on him, but he knows he's got to come up with something. So I think that's a positive thing. And who knows, maybe we can do Yokohama's game as well or better than them. But yeah, I'm going to cop out and say we're either going to win the league or we're going to finish 8th. There you go. That's my prediction. Just average that out. And what's that? That's 4.5. That doesn't work. I'm not very good with averages.
All right, well, yeah, so you're still nailing down your prediction. Obviously, yeah, we've still got until the 21st to get our J-Preds in. So, yeah, don't worry about it, Neil, and I'm sure you'll be ready to rock with a prediction once the season rolls around. But, yeah, once again, I mean, they're always fascinating to watch, Frontale, and it promises to be a really interesting season at Todoroki. And, yeah, as you say, you get to enjoy some midweek jaunts in the Levain Cup, and, yeah, that'll be a nice change from hoofing it around Asia. So, yeah, that's another element to what should be a really interesting season. And, yeah, we look forward to catching up with you throughout it. So, for now, thanks for joining us for, part one of our Top Flight preview. And, yes, we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you guys again.
All right, terrific stuff. Thanks, Neil. We will be back after another quick break to wrap up this episode with Cerezo Osaka and Hiroshima. To join the growing band of J-Talk True Believers on Patreon, visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. All right, terrific to catch up with Neil again. And, let's finish things off, Sam, by talking about Cerezo Osaka and Hiroshima. An interesting season for the pink half of Osaka. They made a stuttering start to the year. They didn't win consecutive games until match days 10 and 11. Then a five-game unbeaten run saw them up into the top six after match day 20. They actually got as high as fourth after match day 27, and then for their last, seven games or so of the season, they were flitting between fourth, fifth, and sixth before ending up in fifth spot, so just out of the ACL reckoning, but at the end of the day, anyway, your fourth spot wasn't enough for Kawasaki after Kobe won the Emperor's Cup. So I guess they were especially impressive, at least results-wise, Sam, in the second half of the season, obviously not to the extent of Yokohama, of course, but they improved their league position, quite impressively in the second half of the year, and they seem to have wanted to stand pat in the transfer window. There are a few ins here and there that you think might add things around the edges. Extending the forward Bruno Mendes's loan was a positive move, but some would say, although as we've said in part one, I'm not a massive rat for Kota Mizunuba, but him leaving and going to Yokohama is just as significant an out. So what have you made of their off season, and do you think standing pat in a roundabout way was enough for them?
I don't think it'll be quite enough if they're going to push on for an ACL place. They've kind of just developed this really Lottina style, organised, quite boring to watch, but very effective way of playing. Getting rid of Mizunuma, and Souza went as well. He went to Saudi Arabia, so there goes all creativity from this team, pretty much. But they will play in a very compact way, and I don't think Lottina was necessarily as big a rap for Souza as I was. He had maybe a bit too much flair for him, but in terms of the ins, like, Yuta Toyokawa is an interesting signing. Kashima as a young player did not a lot on a few loan spells back in J2, and then went over to Belgium at Eupen, I believe it was. Didn't do much until he scored on the final day of the season and kept them up a couple of seasons ago, and kind of became a bit of a cult hero there. But I don't know if he's necessarily going to usurp Bruno Mendes as the main striker, but they have got options there with Kent Okura will come back fairly soon from his injury that kind of ruled him out from all of last season. So there are options up front, and Sakamoto came in from Kyoto, who's another decent winger. I think he'll pretty much step into where Mizunuma was, and I think that's fairly like for like. And then Yuta Koike is the only other one, the left back, who can score fluke goals that get themselves named as goal of the season in some quarters. I think he'd probably be behind Marohashi anyway, so there's not a lot in terms of the incomings that are really going to excite anyone, but I think the way that he has this team set up, I think they'll be very stubborn and still have enough to finish fairly high in the table. I still have them just about as a top six team.
All right, then. Yuta Koike, robbed of the Puskas. Absolutely no doubt about that. And, it'll be interesting to see if he can nudge his way ahead of Yusuke Marohashi, who is, of course, one of the only really creative players left on the Cerezo squad list. As you say, Sam, I knew that D'Souza had left the club as well, but I left him for you, as I knew you were a big rap for him. Well, it's not a death knell, I suppose, for Cerezo. As you say, Lottina didn't rate him as highly as you and several others do. But, if I was a Cerezo supporter, I would have been really disappointed to see Souza leave, because, he was, a really interesting player to watch and, capable of pretty much anything on any given afternoon. So, I don't know about Cerezo. I can't say I share your top six optimism for them, but I probably didn't rate them all that highly throughout the season last year, but they ended up higher than I expected, so they're more than capable of doing the same again. And
Just the only other thing to mention with Cerezo is their young Jun Nishikawa. Obviously, he played a few times in the past season, but he's only 17. He's already linked to Barcelona. I mean, it's a very similar story to what you heard with Kubo at the start of last year. And I mean, he started a lot in pre-season. I just wonder if he could potentially be a similar spark to Cerezo as Kubo was to Tokyo. I mean, Cerezo fans will definitely hope so, and it'd be really interesting to see how he takes to J-League football and if he can push on to those heights and really seal that move to Barcelona.
Gee whiz, Sam, you better give us that name again, and I might have to clip that out and use it in the future. What was it again?
Jun Nishikawa.
All right, yeah, you heard it here first, the listeners. One to watch, and yeah, maybe in the red and blue stripes of Barcelona, who knows, in time to come. All right, well, yes, Cerezo Osaka, we will see how they get on, and indeed if they can fight off the challenge of their Kansai rivals, Kobe, who will be cock-a-hoop after winning a first-ever trophy at the end of last season. Well, of course, the first day of 2020. And indeed, Gamba Osaka, who, as we've already heard, Sam is tipping for big things after the arrival of Gen Shoji, we will see. And we will talk about Kobe and Gamba at length in part two of our preview next week. But for now, we will wrap up part one by talking about Hiroshima, who, Cerezo's season was interesting in 2019. Hiroshima's was very topsy-turvy, to say the least. They were top after seven games. They were, unbeaten after seven and top of the league. They then lost five on the spin to slip all the way down to eighth. A 11-game unbeaten run throughout the middle of the season saw them climb back up to fourth after match day 25. A somewhat sputtering end to the season saw them unable to push on for an ACL spot, and yes, they ended up sixth. Similarly to Cerezo, Sam, I was unable to pick out any marquee signings or real difference makers, but they have extended the loan of Leandro Pereira from Matsumoto, and they've also given Ryo Nagai from Matsumoto Yamaga another chance to make it in the top flight by signing him on a permanent contract. So, Hiroshima, obviously, they set the pace for so long in 2018 before they were swamped by Kawasaki. They had, good spells throughout 2019, but ultimately it wasn't enough to really challenge the top four. So how do you see them faring in 2020?
I think they're going to struggle. They've not brought in anyone of any interest. Like, Kushibiki's an average centre-back. Ryo Nagai's had his chance a few times and never really cut it at this level. Then they've got a young Brazilian, Ezequiel, but I think he's not an improvement on Douglas Vieira and Leandro Pereira. So I think it's pretty much of a muchness from last season. I think Sho Inagaki actually is going to be a reasonably big loss for them, because he does all the kind of dirty work in midfield. He was the legs for Aoyama in there. Yeah, and just breaking up play, he's obviously gone to Nagoya with Figadenti, which is a perfect player for him. So, but for Sanfrecce, it just depends on how well these youngsters can continue to improve. Like, Morishima had a breakthrough last season. Kawabe has been good for a few years. They've still got Taishi Matsumoto, who kind of faded after going to the Copa America, and Keisuke Osako in goals. There is a lot of young players there, but I don't necessarily think the quality is quite there. The likes of Aoyama and Yoshifumi Kashua are just getting on a little bit, and I just wonder if their impact might be a little less this season. So, yeah, I think Hiroshima would be an okay side, but I don't think they're in the reckoning, really, for top four.
Okay, then, so we're wrapping up this episode and wrapping up last season's top six. So we'll take our last question of the episode from Twitter, and saving their best for last, right at Tokyo Fox. He asks, an earlier question that I said we might have to use next week in part two. So he very kindly rephrased to ask, which of the top six from last season might struggle the most this season, in your opinion? So, well, yeah, I read that as repeating as a top six team this season. So for me, it's kind of a cop out, but it's basically the last two teams we've talked about, Cerezo and Hiroshima. I can't really see them repeating as top six teams in 2020. I don't think they'll slide all the way down into relegation trouble or anything like that, but I think mid table is probably the best that they will both be able to do. And I mean, as a glass half full, as a glass half empty FC Tokyo supporter, I mean, there's always a chance I could see that the arse falling out of FC Tokyo, and they could easily slide down to be mid-table again. But trying to be more positive in 2020 Tokyo Fox. So I will just say that for mine, I would not expect Cerezo and Hiroshima to be top six teams again in 2020. Do you have one or more of the last season's top six that you worry in this campaign, Sam?
Well, I'll be with you with the same three. I think Hiroshima, I'd say, are the most likely to drop out. I don't quite think the quality's there compared to a lot of teams coming up from behind them. I just have a feeling Lotina will just kind of bore everyone into submission again and manage to keep Cerezo in and around sixth. And I think Tokyo, I agree with you, there's a chance that Tokyo could, with the ACL commitments as well, I think they'll be in and around sixth as well. So, yeah, all three, I think, could drop out, but the only one I'd be fairly confident on is Hiroshima.
All right, then. So thanks again to Tokyo Fox for your question, and indeed everybody who submitted questions for this week's episode. That we've covered all of last season's top six, and we look forward to seeing how they will all get on in 2020. And next week we're going, Sam, twice as big. Hopefully we won't be recording for twice as long, but yes, there are 12 more top flight teams that we have to cover. So obviously the teams that finished 7th through 16th last season, and with the two promoted sides, of course, Kashiwa and Yokohama FC to talk about as well. So for now, Sam, well, there you go. We've made it through your first episode as a permanent member of the team. It felt a lot like every other episode you've been on, and I'm sure it didn't feel all that much different to you as well. But great to make it official, as I said at the start, and terrific to get your thoughts on the first of what I'm sure will be dozens of episodes throughout the season. I hope that hasn't suddenly sounded too daunting for you.
Yeah, I'll tender my resignation now. No, but thank you very much for having me on board and giving me the chance to witter on about Japanese football every week.
Well, I love it, and I know all the listeners do as well. And we couldn't have had a better person join the team, anybody more qualified than yourself, Sam. So absolutely brilliant. And to get the first one under our belts. So for now, that is it for part one of the 2020 J1 preview episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Sam Robson. Although, Sam, I probably don't have to say that every week now, do I, if you're part of the furniture? But for now, I'll say it again. Thanks to Sam Robson, Stuart Woodward, Alex Bishop, and Neil Debnam, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. We've already said several times throughout this episode, we'll be back next week with part two of our Top Flight season preview. And of course the Extra Time boys have been very busy. Stuart Smith's in-depth, to put it mildly, a written preview of the second tier is currently up as an exclusive for our Patreon supporters. And as we record on a Monday night, I know that Stuart and John's first episode of the new J2 season, which obviously hasn't started yet, but in preparation for that, has been recorded and will be posted in the coming days as well. So watch your podcast feeds for that. And that's just enough of an outro, I think. So once again, thanks to all of our guests, and we'll speak to you next week for part two of our Top Flight preview. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.